Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get started if you don't mind. This session, even if you do mind, we're still going to get started. This session is going to be a little bit different from others you may have attended, a little bit lighter. We've got two purposes here. We're honoring a 14-year legend at ICANN, Glenn Duchancherie. How did I do on the pronunciation, Glenn? Was I close?
Very good, Brad. Thank you.
She's only been rehearsing me for 20 minutes. The other thing we're going to do is get into a little bit of GNSO history through Glenn and some of her stories. Before we do that, I'm going to give you a little bit of background about Glenn. She's originally from Cape Town, South Africa, moved from South Africa in the 80s during the turbulent apartheid era, ended up in the south of France, horrible place to end up, and somehow she went there. She didn't actually know French when she moved. She picked it up in the streets. That's as far as I went when I was asking her. I didn't want to go beyond that. Here's some interesting facts that you may or may not know about Glenn. She survived 6 CEOs, 7 GNSO chairs, and 3 husbands. So my first question to Glenn, were any of the husbands CEOs or chairs?
No.
Okay. I'm not sure I believe her, but we're going to let it go. She's leaving us after 14 years. It's not an overstatement to say Glenn is a legend in the organization. Glenn is going to say it's tough to leave ICANN. She's going to leave behind friends, blah, 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 the stuff that we always hear when people are leaving. As a former journalist, I'm not sure I always buy into what people are telling me. We went out to try and find photographic evidence when Glenn gave notice. We wanted to see, was she actually as upset as she claims to be at leaving? And we did find one photograph that causes us questions. Somebody show me a tear there. Yeah, she's heartbroken to be leaving, all right. Yeah, we're buying into that. Glenn is always, we all know Glenn is like the most put-together, classiest woman in the community. I mean, she's always looking sharp. She's just together. In doing a little bit of digging, though, about Glenn's background, we found out she's a little bit dirty. Let me elaborate on that. We found out that she's in a secret mud wrestling club. When you look at that woman, can you even imagine? And that, there it is, photographic evidence. This, by the way, is not fake news. There's one more photo we found of Glenn that I would like to share with you. We discovered this photo of Glenn showing one of the new CEOs on his first day of an ICANN meeting. I'm not going to identify, in fairness, I'm not going to identify which CEO that was. I will only say that Rod loved her. So with that brief intro, we're going to hear a little bit from Glenn. Then these folks have all got some fascinating stories and tells about their time working with Glenn. And so we're going to hear a little bit from Glenn, and then they're just going to pass the mics. They will self-introduce. Mm-hmm. When we finish that, we're going to open it up a little bit. We're going to hear some more personal stories from Glenn. We want to keep this light. We want you, you know, if you've known Glenn, you've got some interesting stories. We want to keep this a little lighter than your normal sessions, so there'll be a time for you to join in. Glenn, first question. You got into this whole world by teaching English, right?
That's right. I was teaching English in the south of France, and somebody came to me one day and said, I would like to learn English. So I said, oh, yes, fine. So he said, but I want to become a director of CORE. So I said, oh, what's that? So he started telling me about the Internet. So I said, oh, that's very interesting. I said, but listen here, to teach you English is not going to be quite so easy because we'll have to go into some technical terms. So you'll have to tell me all about this. So we walked up and down the Croisette in Cannes for a very long time. And what happened was he was telling me about this CORE, the Council of Internet Registrars, that some of the pioneers are here, and this became more and more fascinating. So when he realized that he was giving me more information than I was actually giving him English information, he phoned me up one day and he said, look, yeah, I've got to go to Washington for a meeting. Will you please come with me because I don't understand a thing? So I packed my bags very quickly and we went off to Washington. And that was one of the meetings that formed the white paper and the green paper, which probably very many of the young participants don't know about, but that was the beginning. So I think I'm going to ask Jonathan and Ken to tell the story of the white paper and the green paper.
Thanks, Ken. That's okay. Right. So my name is Jonathan Robinson. I was back in when I was asked to say a few words here, and they will only be a few words. I cast my mind back to the time, and it turns out it was 1997, which is somewhat shocking. That's 20 years ago, and I was working and running what we would now call a registrar, but of course it was simply a domain name selling operation because there was no such thing as a registrar back in 1997, and we were taking $100 domain names off Network Solutions and I guess £80 domain names off Nominet in the UK in those days, repackaging and selling them for probably $150 and web hosting and email and so on. And so that was the sort of landscape at the time. And there were a few other early operators, and I ended up meeting possibly through CORE. I don't know if it was pre-CORE. It was 97, so I guess we were probably early. It was pre-CORE, right? So somehow or another, one way or another, I ended up going down to south of France and to Monaco, in fact, to go and meet another prospective operator in the business called NameBay, who didn't seem to know quite so much, in spite of the fact that they had convinced Glenn that they did know so much about domain names, and they certainly didn't know much English, and I didn't know much French, which hasn't changed to the day. I know a little bit more about domain names, but not much French. And, of course, there was Glenn, there to fill in the gaps in domain names and talk about French. So that was 1997 in the south of France, and, of course, Glenn and I had the common background of having been both refugees from Cape Town once upon a time, so I could speak a little Afrikaans, and the two of us could, if we needed to, converse in a third language. So that was the meeting of Glenn way back then that predated ICANN, predated, I guess, the DNSO and the GNSO, and it predated, of course, the very big events that then in our industry took place in 1998, which I'm sure many of you are far more well equipped to talk about. I don't know, and I talked to someone about that today, and they said, "You mean Monica Lewinsky?" And I said, "No, it definitely wasn't Monica Lewinsky in Washington at the time. It was the early days of the whole domain name industry and the white paper and so on." So with that, I'll hand over to Ken, who may be able to recall some of those early details.
Well, some of this is a little intense for me, but I want to correct one thing. To the best of my knowledge, and there are enough people in the room who commit, Glenn hasn't been with ICANN for 14 years. She may have been an employee of ICANN for 14 years, but Glenn is a good, solid 20-year person because I know through Chuck, Elizabeth Putnev, and by the way, I bring greetings to those of you who've been around long enough from Louis Tutton. I had a wonderful discussion with him yesterday, and he wanted me to give you his love. He has a little daughter now. So, I mean, from a practical standpoint, Glenn's been around for a long time. I was one of the first chairs of CORE, and I worked with NameBay and Jonathan and so forth. And she was so invaluable, not just for the company that she was working for, but also for us. And once ICANN got started, we realized there was a need for somebody to handle the secretariat functions, and a bunch of people, Phil Shepard and Marilyn and Chuck and a few other people got involved, and we went to Louis and we said, Louis, you know, we got to have somebody that can help us out. And Louis, I think, went to Glenn, and that's how we originally got it started. But I want to give you a couple examples of how sketchy this whole operation was at the very beginning. First of all, how many people in this room went to Accra, Ghana? Okay. If you recall, the bandwidth was so bad in Ghana that you couldn't get on half the time. We were involved in a conference call, and the call lasted an hour and 20 minutes, and they handed us a telephone bill for $4,000. Halfway through the conference, Paul Toomey, who was chairman of the GAC, showed up at breakfast, and I was sitting there with Stuart. I can't remember his last name. Stuart Land, who was the CEO of ICANN at the time. And Paul came up, and Stuart said, "Where have you been? You were supposed to be here 2 days ago." What had happened was Air Ghana had picked them up in London and was flying them down to Accra. Well, Air Ghana's credit was kind of sketchy, so they couldn't get enough gas fuel for the plane in London, so they stopped. This is the God's truth. They stopped in Rome to refuel. Alitalia repossessed the plane and threw all of the passengers off. And the Ghanaian government had to go out and charter a plane to get the rest of these people, including the chairman of the GAC. So, I mean, it was an interesting start. There was a huge amount, and Marilyn's going to go into this. There was a significant amount of contention. There was one group that said, "We got all we need. We don't need any more new TLDs or anything." And there was another group of people that pushed the edge very, very hard and created some real crisis. So those of you who remember John Postellan, and he was still living, took a day and put all of the core names in the route for, I guess, 24 hours. Everybody went crazy. Marilyn called Madeleine Albright, and they got it all handled. But this was a very contentious, and yet at the same time, a group of people that was able to communicate with each other. There was a lot of yelling going on and a lot of stress, but in the long run, we got through it. Marilyn?
So I'm going to start out by introducing myself. My name is Marilyn Cade, and I'm an FOG. What's an FOG? Friend of Glenn's. Glenn and I met in Reston at the North American version of the one of the five consultations on the white paper. My involvement in ICANN, I worked for AT&T WorldNet and for AT&T Computer Systems, and my involvement in ICANN was created due to a crisis that some in this room created. It's true that crises are also opportunities. When the general counsel of AT&T called me up in my office, screamed at me, and told me that I was supposed to fix the GTLD MOU problem, which would have involved launching seven new GTLDs, a seven-person board, which included three international intergovernmental organizations on the board. That was not something that made the ISP community happy, and I think Ken might say something more about that later. But I stumbled into this because the company I worked for was very concerned about the security and stability of the Internet. Postel had earlier rerouted the traffic and created a real crisis where AT&T Labs engineers worked all weekend long trying to fix what they thought was a major failure, which was actually a test. As a result of that, I was paying very close attention, and it wasn't Madeleine Albright, it was President Clinton's chief of staff that I called at the instruction of my boss to say, okay, we can't make a change that doesn't have broader consultation. So I ended up helping to coordinate the involvement of business and NGOs in the United States and working with others who are in this room with other groups and help to organize the Reston-based version of the consultation on the white paper. It was the first time I met Glenn, and I'm going to let Glenn tell you what she thought about me.
Now or then?
Yes, it was at this very big meeting, which was quite terrifying. And I was concentrating on translating every single word to Francois that I was sitting next to, that I had to come and explain to him what was going on. And I saw this woman walking up and down, and I got so scared because I thought, wow, she is so efficient. She really knows what's going on here. I wish I were like that, but she is far too efficient and powerful for me. And then we ended up traveling together, by the way, years later.
Glenn and I have a special code word, limes. There's some people in this room who will appreciate that, because in many of the travels that I've undertaken to ICANN meetings, Glenn and I and a few others have sometimes toured, like in Tunisia and Morocco and in India. And Glenn was my procurer. In Tunisia, she made the driver drive to 4 different stops to buy a bag of limes for me. So I want you guys to know that woman can do anything. And here's my third example of Glenn. Right after Paul Toomey became the CEO and president, and he hired John Jeffrey and Kurt Pritz, one of the staff people was assigned to develop the first strategic plan of ICANN. And we had heard rumors that there was a strategic plan being developed, but none of us had any transparency of it, and certain people sitting up here were pushing to try to get more information, couldn't get anything. Even I couldn't pry information out of people. And when it was announced, it was version 19. And in the GNSO Policy Council, on the microphone, I said, I am really bad at math, but even I can tell the difference between version 1 and version 19. And the council, Bruce, I think, actually authored the resolution, suggested that we would contribute $5,000 from our budget to help to hire a room in Amsterdam, and we organized a public consultation 2 days done by the community on the strategic plan. The staff came and listened, and Glenn and I were the chief organizers of this event. The most powerful message that I can give you about Glenn is Glenn embodies a phrase that I know is really resonates with many from the Jesuit community, and that is serve to lead and lead to serve. And she has been leading in so many different ways, and it is such a great pleasure to be able to comment about the contribution that this pioneer in helping to launch ICANN has contributed.
I'm Chuck Gomes, and I'm with VeriSign. But when all this started, it wasn't VeriSign. Did you hear Ken talk about the attacks? Guess who was being attacked? People wanted competition in domain name registrations. There wasn't any. In 1995, when we first started charging for .com/.net and .org domain names, first time they were charged for, you had to pay for a registration. It was all free before that. And all of a sudden, especially with money flowing, people got very interested in competition, which was a good demand. But that made for an interesting life for anybody from Network Solutions at the time. And Marilyn mentioned the Internet Forum for the white paper. That followed the green paper was in January 1998.
white paper followed in June of 1998, and out of that came four international meetings. The first one was in Reston, as Marilyn mentioned. Second one was in Geneva. The third one was in Singapore. And then the fourth one was in Buenos Aires. I had the privilege of attending all four of those. And I'm looking here in front of me, Tony Harris, who his organization hosted the fourth one in Buenos Aires. Fascinating meeting. First time that there was simultaneous translation in a meeting. It obviously wasn't ICANN yet, but four of those meetings, and out of that came the ICANN organization. And there was even a one-day meeting after the board was formed in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that several of us attended that. So that was the start of ICANN. And ICANN was formed, and by the way, I'm going to come back and talk about Glenn later because it fits in more how Glenn and I met with what Philip's going to share. But those were really tumultuous times, and especially for Network Solutions, because people wanted our business, rightfully so. It was a good business. But keep in mind, we were the only registry and registrar at that time. In fact, there wasn't a distinction between registries and registrars. Tony probably remembers the translators had a terrible time translating those terms in Buenos Aires, because it was a brand new concept at that time. And let me stop there. Again, I'm going to come back and talk about Glenn later, but because I met Glenn just a little bit later than then, and in the early days of what was the DNSO, and I think Philip's going to talk about that.
Thank you very much, Chuck. So my name is Philip Shepherd, and I am an interviewee. I'm the person who helped interview Glenn, and what you have in my hand here, don't worry, it's not a speech. This is evidence. It's evidence from a little-known website called dnso.org, which comes with a health warning, which is it's all archive and please don't trust it too much and go and see ICANN instead. So the first thing I'm taking you back now to 2001, the Names Council of 2001, all of whom were scrabbling around desperately trying to do their business without an iota of secretarial help. ICANN was giving us nothing, and we all realized we needed help desperately. And so together we decided to kick off a business plan for what we needed and some recruitment. And let me just run through some names here, because a few of those people are still with us today. And if we hear your name, shout out loudly, I am here. So the first one, alas, is definitely not with us, Peter DeBlon, RIP, Elizabeth Portneuve, Oscar Rabelais, myself and the business constituency, along with Teresa Swinehart and Grant Forsyth, Hiro Hotta, Tony Harris, and Michael Schneider for the ISPs, Erica Roberts, Ken Stubbs for the registrars, Paul Kane, and a nice little aside here from the notes of this particular meeting report said, Paul Kane, brackets, left the meeting early. And if you know Paul, that tells you everything. Roger Cacchetti, Axel Alstermullen and Guillermo Kerry for the intellectual property constituency, Milton Muller, YJ Park and Vanny for the non-commercials, Louis Tuton with ICANN staff, Maka Yamin, a little-known scribe, and Robert Gattano as GA chair at the time, sitting in observing. Anyway, we got together in Jan 2001. We wrote a business plan. It was 3 pages long. Item 6, NC Secretariat. Establish a professional secretariat for the NC. Strategies. Establish a search subcommittee with the budget committee to identify candidates and, working with a chair, recommend recruitment. So we scrabble down to the notes of the budget committee of February 2001, and that was Chuck to my right, Erica Roberts and Elizabeth Portneuve. February 16th, 2001, Chuck gets an email. Dear Mr. Gomez, as you're aware, I will be interested in the Names Council Secretariat. I am a South African born, but have lived in France since 1983. I've been involved in internet development since 1997, have a wide cultural background, having lived in several European countries, and good experience of multicultural settings, as well as being fluent in several languages. I realize that one of the requirements for such a position is the management of DNSO Names Council lists, servers, etc. I would appreciate it very much if we could arrange a telephone conversation with a technician who could eventually help me to get specific details such as traffic, number of servers, etc. So little did we know, Glenn was not just a people person, but there she was pitching for the technical side as well. And indeed attached to that email was her CV. I won't take you to the whole CV, but I will take you to the languages section. English, Afrikaans, bilingual, mother tongue. Fluent, French, Dutch, German. Basic knowledge of Xhosa, the African language spoken in the Cape Province. Now, if nothing was good preparation for ICANN 2004 Cape Town, that was it. So what could we do? Well, we had to interview, of course. We interviewed three people, two techies. They said, we know everything about the way that servers operate. And then we interviewed Glenn, and she said, I know everything about the way people operate. So guess who got the job? Now, that was February 2001, so I take you now to an ICANN moment. There's now me, I'm chairman of this names council. We've recruited already, probably March, I think, email of October 2001 from me to Stuart Lynn, president of ICANN. I realize ICANN staff are very busy right now, and Louis Tuton in particular. However, there's a growing sense of frustration that the introduction of efficient DNSSEC secretariat is being delayed because we've been waiting for around 2 months for two draft contracts on ICANN. As you know, you manage the funds and you promised to make the contracts for us. From Mr. Stuart Lynn to Mr. Philip Shepherd. Philip, I know how important this is for the DNSO, and we too would like to see it done. It's not that we love the DNSO any less, but there are other agreements that have been in the pipeline even longer. Please bear with us and be patient. So anyway, finally, we got it signed. We had a contract, and we recruited Glenn. And now we come to the very last bit of my words and the interactive session. So I take you back to the other work of the Budget Committee of that year, and that was writing the RFP, our requirements for the secretariat that we wanted. We set four objectives, and I'm going to ask you, the audience, if you believe Glenn de Saint-Géry has met those four objectives. Objective number one, ensure provision of logistical support for the daily functioning of the DNSO Names Council and its successors. Yes? Objective number two, manage DNSO financial activities. Well, the DNSO survived, so probably that worked too. Objective three, ensure provision of support for the daily functioning of the DNSO. Objective four, this is a tough one. This is what we put on Glenn Sandoui. Develop processes and procedures that will minimize the amount of subjectivity and increase the amount of measurable objective criteria in the consensus building process. This should therefore make it more possible for the Names Council to perform its role of managing the consensus building process in a way that will create increased confidence throughout the internet community. Darling, you've been doing that ever since. And we're almost there. Have we?
Thank you. I'm a newbie up here, and I really feel it. I'm probably the only one up here that had nothing to do with ICANN pre-2006, everything that's been talked about. In fact, I must confess, at that time, I was one of the Internet Engineering Task Force haters of ICANN. And ended up here only because I had criticized ICANN and someone had said, hey, big mouth, come on down. So I got down here. I started working with Glenn and the council. Somehow or other ended up chairing it. And then Glenn comes to me one day with a problem and says, you know, there's this General Assembly list. And I go, General Assembly, what's that? And said, well, you know, there was the DNSO, what was that? So she explains all this to me, and it seems that there's this list of poor abandoned souls on the General Assembly list that had been an integral part of the DNSO, but when the DNSO ceased to exist, they became displaced persons. They were the group that had not found themselves a home anywhere in the new GNSO, CCNSO, organizations that were forming. This was an angry group. This was an upset group. This was a group that Glenn had to deal with almost every day, would get in touch with me every day. We would have a crisis of, and I don't remember all their names, but I'm sure you do remember all their names.
Some of them every.
Huh?
Some of them.
Yes. And in fact, it was really an amazing, I would say, labor of love in terms of taking this list of people who had somehow managed to fall away during the reorganization of ICANN. And this was the first, or maybe not the first, but it was the reorganization that gave us the GNSO. There may have been ones before. It was the first one I learned of in history. And basically, day in, day out, this angry, angry list. And we would take these problems to the GNSO Council, and they would say, that's the GNSO list. That doesn't count anymore. Forget it. Glenn wouldn't forget it, because these were people, after all. These were people who had come to ICANN and had said, you know, we want to be part of this thing, had formed this really important thing called the General Assembly, and then had ceased to have import. Glenn stayed with them beyond the point when I was chair and finally got out of having to deal with it. And beyond that, Glenn continued taking care of these people, some of whom were really quite mad, day in, day out, with great patience and great care. I think at this point it eventually did fade away, but I don't think it was ever closed, was it?
No, it's not closed,
yeah.
Because I
but
never, ever got the permission officially to close that list, so it's still on the website. I think the last time it was used.
The last one I saw was 2014. I went looking. I went looking last night to see if there had been any traffic on it of late, because I knew it hadn't been closed, and it was certainly still active when I stopped working with you on it. But it was really quite amazing to have everyone around saying, ignore them. But you're right, never give permission to close it, because how do you close something that has no reason to exist anymore? There was no rules anywhere for closing it. There was nothing that could be done but take care of it. So Glenn pretty much got each one of the chairs as we progressed through her care, and being a chair, I definitely felt that I was in her care many times, basically took care of that group of people until finally they withered away. And that's that I found truly amazing, and you know, and then worked with Glenn through the next reorganization of the GNSO. So I think that was great, and that was my story in terms of the history that I was not part of. So, fantastic. And now I pass it to you.
Thank you, Evan. In fact, Avery was one of the successors of the nominating committee. Actually, you were appointed to the council for the nominating committee,
yep.
Is that right? Yeah. So my name's Bruce Tonkin. I guess I have the distinction that I was chair of both the GNSO when it included the CCs, as well as becoming the chair of the GNSO. And there's a lot of transition in that time. And what you see today, basically in terms of the facilities that you see in these meetings and the way the rooms are set up, all that was really developed by Glenn over the sort of 14 years or so with the GNSO. And so going back to the early days, and it was interesting that you mentioned the skills and telephone and AV things, because we didn't have any AV people. Glenn was it. And we basically didn't have any money either. So at the very beginning, we were literally kind of handing the hat around to the constituencies at that time, which is the ISPs, the business constituency, the registries and the registrars, intellectual property and the non-commercial. And so every GNSO council meeting would actually have a budget session, and we'd talk about how much funds we'd got from all the different constituencies and therefore what we could afford to do. And so one of the first things we managed to afford was to pay for Glenn, which was a huge improvement. But that was about it. That was really the only money we had, just enough to pay for Glenn. And so when we'd end up in a conference venue, we couldn't afford rooms like this with mics and drinks and food. We had you'd come into a room like this with nothing in it, and we had no money to pay for anything. And then, you know, we'd sort of say to Glenn, well, initially it was just people would self-fund. There was no travel funding for anybody, so you basically paid your own way to attend these meetings. And obviously there would be people that say, well, we'd like to hear what happened in those meetings. You know, is there some way of doing that? And so then we started setting up phone bridges, and AT&T, where Marilyn was working at the time, actually paid for the phone bridge. So so they would pay for the bridge but not the phone, because you're in a conference venue somewhere. So Glenn would have to find a phone. And so she would miraculously find a phone from somewhere, and we'd plug it, we'd find a wall socket, and then we'd get AT&T, I think, to dial the phone, because we couldn't afford to use the hotel phone. So the first half an hour of the meeting was getting the phone to work so that people could listen to the conversation. And then in those days, in the relatively small room, so there's no microphones, and we're very good at shouting at each other at that time. Still are, but back then it was an art form. And then as the groups got bigger and we started to include more people, it was very hard for people to hear at the end of the phone. So then we thought, okay, we need a microphone. Again, we didn't have any money for one, but one would just appear at each of these venues. And then you obviously needed a speaker, so a speaker would appear. And then we had to get some way, because then people on the phone, so we could hear the speaker in the room, but the people on the phone. So then we'd jury-rig a phone, often gaffer taped to the speaker, and that was basically the first sort of audio recordings that the community could actually listen into a live meeting. And as we got bigger, we realised, okay, we needed more than one microphone. And this actually probably something that you could do relatively easy in a country like Denmark, where you know, they'll probably understand English and are fairly used to it. But a lot of the locations we're in, people weren't used to phone bridges. In fact, that was, you know, they were going, why do you need a phone? Like, there's the four of you in the room. You know, are you talking to each other? What, you know, you don't need a phone. And go, oh, yeah, but we've got, you know, a million people that want to listen into this call, so we need a phone. And so Glenn would then have to negotiate this in languages other than English. And so, and often you would just somehow make do, because I remember there weren't necessarily languages that even you spoke in some of these locations. But somehow Glenn would endear herself to the local venue and the people that worked at that venue. And they would actually bring stuff to us. Again, we didn't pay for any of it. But, you know, miraculously, we'd end up with speakers, and we had multiple microphones, and then, you know, a coffee machine would appear the next day. So as the meeting progressed, more and more stuff ended up in our room, which when you then look at the budget of those meetings, there's no way we could pay for any of that. Ken?
Just for your information, those of you who are reviewing the plans for ICANN, the budget for the years that Bruce is discussing for ICANN was roughly $4 million. So you can imagine the pressure that we were under, because the budget was so incredibly small, and yet they were still holding 4 meetings a year.
Yes. Well, and most of the budget went into putting the meetings on. It was kind of like we lived from week to week between the meetings, and that's where you saw so many of these things happening.
That's right. And then as the ICANN budget itself would grow, there still wasn't any direct funding for this community work. But things would, again, as you know, there might have been staff, and they might have got a coffee machine, but somehow that coffee machine would end in the Gina Zo room by the end of the week. And so, you know, it really is a testament to the ability of Glenn to work with really starting at each venue with basically nothing. Because nowadays what happens is ICANN actually brings all its own equipment. So everything is pre-tested, all the mics they know about, and it's literally like a shipping container of equipment. But in the early days, none of that was the case, and we just self-provided at each venue. And then the other transition that started to happen is that initially the GNSO was quite closed. So when we had a policy development process, there was one representative from the six constituencies that could attend that policy development process. And then we found people would sort of say, well, we want to participate. And we then started to create this concept of a working group where anybody could attend. And then we started recording the phone calls for people that couldn't dial in. And we, you know, for the first time, we started making audio transcripts available for the community. And then we found that we, for the new GTLD policy development work, it was very hard to get everything done in the three meetings a year. And so then we started creating our own meetings, basically, for the new GTLD process. And that was really the first time we had separate face-to-face meetings outside of an ICANN environment. And again, Glenn basically organised those all herself. You know, there was no big staff of people to organise a venue. I think the first time we had one was in the AT&T offices, which meant we have phones. And then and another important part of that at that time was we typically meet for 2 days. And often the first day everyone would be yelling at each other, basically. And then I always sort of thought, well, what we should do is get everyone together for dinner or for drinks and try and get everyone to cool down. And usually the next day was much more productive because people had a chance to sort of get out what was causing them to get so angry during the meeting. And people would say, actually, this person actually was quite a reasonable person. They had the same taste in food or in beer as me. And then the next day things were a lot more relaxed. And again, Glenn would, because we didn't have any money, we all paid our own way, but she would find a venue that would be relatively cost effective that we could all travel to because we didn't have ICANN buses to get there. We'd usually have to walk. So she had to sort of deal with us and get us to some sort of restaurant at a reasonable price and build that community. And I think that was a big part of the success of the new GTLD work, really, is the fact that Glenn, behind the scenes, would both get the venue organised but also organise the social events that sort of got brought people together. So I've probably spoken enough.
So I said I would come back and talk about how I met Glenn. And Glenn, I'm gonna have you talk about follow me up on this a little bit. Philip mentioned a budget committee for the DNSO, and I was on that, as he said. Roger Cochetti was actually the Network Solutions member on the council, but for some reason I was on that budget committee, and I had the task of interviewing Glenn. So we met on the telephone across the Atlantic on a telephone interview, and that's where I met Glenn. Now, I'm going to follow up with that, but Glenn, why don't you tell us about that interview? She remembers the details of the interview. All I remember is I made a good recommendation.
That actually, it wasn't one interview, Chuck. It was a couple of interviews, and Chuck grilled me from top to bottom. What did I know about conflict resolution? How would I get consensus in a group? And all sorts of questions like that. So I was becoming more and more terrified. But then what happened was they couldn't make up their minds because of this money business and all this. So there was a meeting in Montevideo in 2001. In September, and that was the first time where I met Bruce, but Bruce was with somebody from Melbourne IT called Erica Roberts, and she gave me another grilling. I had to spend an entire day going around Montevideo. I didn't see anything of the city. I just had to answer question after question after question. And by the end of the day, I thought, oh, well, I've wasted all my money coming here because it's certainly not going to employ me. But what happened at that meeting was I went on my own funds and I landed up in the cheapest hotel in Montevideo, which I realized I couldn't stay at when I got there because it smelled of weed. So I had to get out. And I didn't have any money, so Philip was there, and Philip very kindly booked me into the venue hotel and lent me some money. So that's how I got through that meeting. But that meeting was also very, very interesting because at that meeting was the previous secretariat, Elizabeth Pochtenhoff, who was also a very forbidding type of person because she was an engineer, and I really was quite scared of her too. And they did a board director election. So this was my introduction now to elections for board directors. And she was sitting there and she showed me how the online tool for elections worked. And at the end of the election, she stood up and the room was filled and she announced the election, the candidate. And immediately there was a physical fight that broke out. And probably that is why one of the people left early. So I thought, well, I hope all the elections aren't like this, but it's a good introduction. Then the other thing that happened at that meeting was, as we were getting onto the airplane to come back, everybody was seated in their seats, and then suddenly we were told we all had to leave the plane. So we all left, and then they started inspecting the babies. They took their diapers off. So I thought, what is happening? And being a Spanish country, and it was very difficult because everybody was choo-choo-choo-choo-choo very fast in Spanish, I couldn't understand what was happening. And so we all got back onto the plane again, and when we arrived in Madrid, we heard about the Twin Towers. And we were probably one of the only planes to have left the meeting because all the others were stuck in South America. So that was my Montevideo meeting, which was where I went to show myself to ask them if I was good enough for the job. And there I met, yes, Chuck was there.
So I'll be real brief, but of the positive contributions that I have made over the years, there's one that is number one. And that was that interview with Glenn and the recommendation that she was the right person. And she has proved that over and over again.
So you may have noticed that wine has been passed to all these folks. You guys don't get any. No, you know, we shouldn't even be, this is not for us. This is for the board. We wanted it, but we couldn't afford it. I'm messing with you. Come on, lighten up. It's a tough room in here. We're going to keep talking. You've heard the people who were Glenn's friends and colleagues tell some stories about her. Now we're going to hear from Glenn herself to tell a few stories, but there's too much sobriety in the room. Help yourself to some wine and beer and some food. We're going to keep talking. But we're going to sound a lot better if you've had wine and beer. So please, help yourselves.
Cheers, Glenn.
Cheers.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you, Brett. Please, go on.
While you're all up, I just want to make one more quick acknowledgement. There is somebody in the room, or was somebody in the room, who was a key factor in bringing the General Assembly forward and creating an awareness for participation by these communities in the future years, and that was Roberto Gaetano, who was the first chair of the General Assembly. I don't know whether Roberto's still here or not.
As I mentioned, we're going to keep, while you guys are getting your wine and beer, we're going to keep talking. And I want to ask Glenn the one thing. Glenn told me a lot of stories today, but out of all those stories, you have one memory that sticks out. You must, about your years with the GNSO, your years at ICANN. I want to hear that one story.
One story? Oh, there are lots of stories, Brad. Let me tell you one of the, because Bruce mentioned this the telephones and the microphones at meetings, it was true there was nothing. So I would usually go around the hotel and ask the hotel to supply us with a telephone. And I also asked the hotel sometimes to supply us with somebody to sit with that telephone, and I explained to the hotel person what they had to do with the telephone. It worked quite well. And that also was the beginning of the DNSO and the GNSO always having open, recorded, and transcribed meetings. So we were in Shanghai. And as usual, things haven't changed very much. Some groups needed meetings which weren't planned for. So we had to get telephones quickly, a room quickly, get things set up. And I found two telephones. I found the rooms. I got two hotel guys sitting at the table with the telephones to work them. And the meetings went on. And then at the end of the meeting, I was in one room, so I saw the hotel guy go off with the telephone because it belonged to them. And in the second room, I went back into the second room, and there was nobody, there was no telephone. So I thought, well, they've taken it, it's fine. When I wanted to check out of the hotel told me, no, I can't check out because I stole a telephone. So I said, but you're kidding. So they said, no, you stole a telephone. We're not going to let you go. So I looked around and I saw Marilyn. So I thought, well, there's nobody that is going to go up against Marilyn. So I called Marilyn over and I said, come on, Marilyn, please help me. They won't let me check out because I've stolen a telephone. And, well, I must say, they probably wanted to get rid of these two women then as quickly as possible so I could check out. This was at the Shanghai Hotel. Do you remember, Bruce, the Shanghai meeting? No, at the Shanghai. The Shanghai meeting is...
I just want to respond to this real quickly, Glenn. I was looking for other people to delegate this to because I thought, oh, my God, this is above my pay grade. But on the other hand, I work for AT&T. And the president of AT&T Shanghai Symphony had sent his driver over to the hotel a couple of times. So I basically threatened them with the fact that the Chinese government was going to complain about their treatment of Glenn. And then I said to Glenn, let's get your bill and get the hell out. I'm just going to do one quick thing, Brad. I'm going to announce the new ICANN Trivial Pursuit game of ICANN 58, which is, where and when in the world did you meet Glenn de Saint-Juré? And over the next few days, I have a little gray book that you can write those memories in and share them with Glenn. I'll bring them around to different groups. But start thinking about it, because you may find out that you met her at a different time than you're now thinking.
Let me just remember, it was 1999 in Los Angeles. First meeting, I was GAC, and we met her. But I want to thank her for another thing. It's just for the help for DNS women for those times. And I sent some pictures for you, but because you are, you know, George is photographing. But I believe that a lot of you have met Glenn before you imagine, because most of us are involved in the, even never working into the GNSO. I was in the office. Remember, yes. In the review, the first review, I was leaving the board when they started the first review. So we work in some way with her, even not member of the GNSO. So I believe everyone here has in some way sitting together or asking something to her. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you, Vanda. Thank you.
Thank you. We want to We want to open this up and hear from some of you about Glenn. And Diane Schroeder here has got a great Glenn story.
Hi there. So for those of you that don't know me, I'm Diane Schroeder, and I have worked for ICANN since February of 2000. And I've had the pleasure of knowing Glenn really since Montevideo. But in the early days when Glenn supported the DNSO and was not part of ICANN staff, I share, having survived several CEOs with Glenn, had a CEO who, while being a very nice man, did not want people who were not staff in the staff room at the ICANN meeting. Very adamant about it. Wanted to be able to come in and just talk to anybody and not worry about who was in the room. And so I was constantly being asked, who's that blonde? Why is she here again? And I was really pleased to say that when we went through the whole process and formed the GNSO, one of the first things we did was make Glenn staff. And so in Rio, which was the meeting where Paul became the CEO and it was Stuart's last meeting, I was really pleased to be able to say, Glenn, and at the next meeting, I don't have to sneak you in the back door to use a copier. The other thing about Glenn that I remember from the early days just so very distinctly is that Glenn would be the first person up in the morning, the prep for a meeting, get the meeting room. She would be the last person in there at night getting prepped for the meeting the next day. But Glenn always knew where to shop and where to eat in any city we were having a meeting. And I could never figure out how she did that because the rest of us never got out of the building at all. And so it would be that, Glenn, I have 2 hours to shop for something for my family. Where should I go? And she would send you to the exact perfect place. The exact perfect gift could be found at the greatest price. It's a skill she has that those of us at meetings rely upon that we are sorely going to miss.
Thanks, Diane. So when Glenn and I were talking before this, in prep for this, Glenn gave me a headline on something, and I want to hear the background on it. 2008, February, and you're in New Delhi, there was a fire under the council table.
Yes. We had a wonderful meeting in New Delhi in 2008. It was a beautiful venue, a little bit away from the hotel, but everything was set out in tents and it was very beautifully done. However, there were sometimes connectivity issues. And you would see little sparks along the wall, but it didn't matter. And very often, things just didn't work, but it was all right. We got them to work. I can remember the techies standing there and putting together two pieces of wire, and it went very well. So we get to the council meeting, and the council meeting was in the main hall on a very, very imposing stage. And with a big cloth around the table, a U-shaped table, for the 20 councillors that there were. And I was, of course, walking around to see that everything was all right. And I started smelling something. So I got one of the local staff to find out what was happening. So they put their head under this thing on the table, under the long tablecloth, and he came back to me and he said, there's a fire under the table. So I said, please put it out, don't tell a soul, and just keep quiet. And if need be, stay under the table to see that nothing... So that's what happened, and I don't think they really realized either that there was no transcription, there was no recording, because there was just no connectivity at all anywhere. Everything had gone down because they had a car battery underneath the GNSO table. That I think was one of the highlights.
Well, so I've got to ask you, based on that story, I mean, today we couldn't even have a fire. We would have to fill out requisition forms for a fire. And then you'd have board members trying to light a joint underneath the table. You know, it would be horrible. What was your most embarrassing experience? I mean, you've had so many experiences. What was the most embarrassing for Glenn out of all those years, all those meetings?
Most embarrassing? Oh, I had lots of it. I think this one where everybody gets me up on the stage. That's the most embarrassing, Brad.
I was trying to... Glenn was very nervous coming into this meeting. I said, it's going to be fine. It's very loose. You know, it'll work if people are talking. And I said, it's going to be fine. Just don't screw up. if anybody's got any questions, anything you want to ask Glenn, raise your hand. Tanzanika's got the mic, and she's cruising around out there.
Hi, my name's Sherry Stubbs, and I'm the secretariat for the Registry Stakeholder Group. And I joined, actually, the registry's constituency. I was interviewed by Chuck Gomes and Miriam Shapiro in December of 2001 and started in January of 2002. And I, had it not been for Glenn, I was totally out of my realm when it came to what was going on at ICANN. My background was in healthcare management, and I did organizational management, and that's why I was hired, to try and get the registry's constituency on task. And it was then the DNSO. And Glenn and I have shared many a moment together at, when I first started coming to meetings. My first in-person meeting was in Montreal, so that's when I met Glenn. And I learned so much from her. I would have not, I would not have survived 16 years without her guidance, her support. And one who works with her knows that you worship the ground she walks on. She is the go-to person for anything you need, at regardless. If she doesn't know, she'll go find out and be there and always has your back. And I'm going to miss you desperately, my friend, and I love you very much. You know that.
Cherry, thank you very much. But I can say the same about you, because we've stood together over many, many years. When there was no other support.
No.
Yes. That was my support too. Yes.
Well.
And we made a little pact, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Mm. That we'd walk away together.
We are. There's going to be a picture of our behinds, arm in arm, walking down.
And Diane has one thing to add.
I'd actually like Glenn to introduce her family, because if there's one group of people we owe a great debt to, it's the family of anybody in this organization that has put in as much time as Glenn. And you've got several of your family members here, and we should take a few minutes to thank them and meet them while they're here. So can you do that for me, Glenn?
Thank you, Diane.
Before she gives this introduction, these are the prettiest people you've ever seen. It's kind of sick how pretty her family is. You want me to help you with the names, or?
Yes, I'd like to say that I have got all my children here and one grandchild.
Why don't we have them stand?
Can we bring them up, please? Gabriella, Gisela, George, and Max.
Where's the photographer from Fashion Today? You know, while we're up here, yes, I'm coming to you, Gisela.
And by the way, this was the biggest surprise of my life, because I had no idea they were coming. They walked into the room.
As most here know, Gisela, her daughter, works with her. What's that like?
My daughter works with me.
No, Glenn's daughter, you work for her.
Well, actually, I have to say that my daughter works with me as well. She's been to 4 ICANN meetings. She's been to 4 continents before she was 2 years old, and she sits with me day and night like some people who know when we're on the phone. She'll come up and she's, who's that on the phone? Who's that on the phone? And I'll just have to, can I see them? And I'm like, no. So we've just recently employed Evan in the Turkish office, who's joined the team, and she knows Yeshim personally, and she adores Yeshim. So the first encounter with Evan with the training was, Mommy, can I see them? Mommy, can I see them? I'm like, no. Video. Ah, in my dressing gown on a Monday morning, not really done up. And so I said to Evan, I promise I will not bring my dressing gown with me to meetings. So what is it like? Well, it's thanks to all, I don't know what words I'm losing the words, but it's my... Glenn, who sorry, that was a giveaway there, my mother. Glenn, who introduced me to ICANN in November 2008, I was put in touch with Nick Ashton Hart and Denise Michelle, who at the time were running at large, and we managed to get me to the first at large summit in Mexico in probably March 2009. But I started officially in January 2009 with Denise and Nick, and I probably, as everyone says, the rest is history.
Great, thank you. You know, I think at this stage it's going to be more productive to do away with the microphones and let you just mingle and talk to Glenn at your will. But before we do that, I just want to say thank you.
Well, I just want to say thank you. Thank you to this wonderful community. Thank you for all your trust. Thank you for all your love. And we've gone a long, long, long way. And now it's for you to continue, because we're in a new era for ICANN. And I'll be looking in on the side. But I'm fascinated to see what this new era for ICANN is going to look like. So thank you all. Thank you.
Sorry, if I may.
Much.
She's not leaving. She is babysitting from now on when I'm at any ICANN meeting. So they will be following remotely. Welcome to the new remote participation.
Thank you, Glenn. We love you.